Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to The Art Detective with me, Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford art historian, a lecturer and a writer. But for the purposes of this podcast, I'm your chief investigator of images. Now, you all should know by now that I am a keen medievalist, and of all the periods, my favourite is, of course, the Anglo-Saxons. And what better artwork to epitomise, well, in many ways, the death of the Anglo-Saxon period than the Bayeux Tapestry. It is an extraordinary work of art. Now, I am at a very special event in London. I am in Granary Square at, where are we, the school, what's this building known
House
as?
House of Illustrations.
House of Illustrations, founded by Quentin Blake, I understand.
It was his brainchild, yes.
And I'm joined by a very special guest. Please introduce yourself, Joe.
I have such a long surname, I have to introduce myself. It's Joe Whitlock Blundell, and I'm the limited edition director of the Folio Society.
The Folio Society. Now, I have a confession to make. Even when I couldn't put food on the table and eat anything as a student, I subscribed to the Folio Society, and these glossy books would turn up once a month, and I would just, that would be all I needed as sustenance.
That warms the cockles of the heart. And because you're so young, that must have been in my era as well.
Oh, right.
There will have been books that I designed.
Well, I've been consuming your works for some time, Joe. But we're here for a special event, aren't we?
We are indeed. It's the launch of the first ever reproduction of the Bayeux Tapestry as a continuous scroll. The original tapestry is 73 metres long, and it's an incredible artefact. It consists of a number of scenes, but all the scenes interpenetrate with each other. They're continuous. It's really like the movies before the invention of the movies. Our reproduction is about two-thirds of the size of the original, which is still over the length of two cricket pitches.
Oh, my goodness, two cricket pitches. Yeah. So it comes out about 49 metres, you were saying.
Something like that,
yeah,
yes. That's right.
Goodness.
And the important thing about it is that the scenes are continuous. Mm. If you reproduce this in the book, every time you show an image, you're cutting through the next image because you can't separate them from each other.
So this is why it's so hard to do the Bayeux Tapestry in a book format.
You can't.
Because you're just cutting it up, aren't you?
You're just cutting it up. Mm. Whereas this enables you to see it all one scene after another continuously as it was originally planned to be.
Tell me how that's working. It's a scroll.
It's a scroll.
The Folio Society have produced a scroll.
It's a scroll. The scroll is over 40 metres long. And it is, I think, the longest single continuously printed image ever of all time.
My goodness.
And it had to be printed on a special printing press, and it required particular trickery by the reprographics experts to join, because all the original images we were working from, of course, are single shots of sections of the tapestry, and those all had to be merged together.
You had individual photographs of sections of the tapestry, and then you had to have an expert to make those look as if they were the same photos. Is that one continuous photo?
Yeah, they're essentially merging the photographs together.
Goodness me.
And then it was printed on a press, which is actually normally used for wallpaper, believe it or not. So this incredibly fine artefact produced on what you'd think of as a sort of throwaway material.
Oh, yeah. Actually on wallpaper material?
It is actually wallpaper paper.
Gosh.
And that's what enables it to be used in a scroll box, which we also invented specifically for this production. The scroll box is about three, foot, 3.5 foot long.
I've seen it upstairs. It's a lovely thing. Glass top.
And it has two handles in the sides. And inside is this massive scroll, which weighs something like 7 kilos. I forget. It's huge. And you can wind it from one end to the other and thereby see the tapestry from beginning to end.
Unbelievable. I mean, as a student of the medieval period, to be able to do that, I've been upstairs having a play with the box.
Good.
It is the most extraordinary thing. And what I think I found so extraordinary about it is the detail. So I can see individual prick holes from the needles. And obviously, one thing we need to say, of course, the Bayeux tapestry is a misnomer, isn't it?
What should
we be calling it, Joe?
Well, the latest book on the subject does, I think it says La Tapisserie by de Bayeux, but it then says the subtitle is Le chef d'œuvre de what's the French for embroidery? De la broderie.
La broderie. So it should be an embroidery, shouldn't it?
Because
it's not woven wool.
No.
It's embroidery that has been sewn into linen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean, why is it so extraordinary? Why should we be celebrating the Bayeux tapestry?
Because there's nothing like it.
Mm.
Because it is of such fantastic artistic value.
I think so.
Every single figure, every tree, every building is so appealing to the eye. The use of colour, the use of design is just stunning. And because it is the key moment in British history, without a doubt.
There's a reason we're all taught at school about 1066, isn't there? And it is because of the redefining of the nation on just completely different lines. We go from an Anglo-Saxon country to a Norman province, essentially, don't we?
Well, it was the merging of the Norman with the Anglo-Saxon. You know this much better than I do, of course, but it's the merging of the Norman with the Anglo-Saxon that makes us who we are.
Exactly.
And it makes our language what it is. Mm. Perhaps that's the most important legacy of all of the Normans, is it freed up English from being a single source language to being a double source language. And that freed it up to bring in other influences from elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that's why it's such a rich and flexible instrument.
And it's an incredible work of Romanesque art, but it's also this example of Opus Anglicanum, this skill that the English women, we now, I think, pretty much categorically assume amongst scholars that this is an English work made probably by nuns, possibly in Canterbury.
That's the favourite theory.
Yeah.
Who commissioned it is very much up for grabs.
It is, isn't it? So our options are?
Well, Bishop Odo is the top candidate because he was Bishop of Bayeux. So why else should it have ended up in Bayeux if it hadn't been for him? But the objection to him as a candidate is that he actually hated the Anglo-Saxons. He was beastly to them.
Even though he had Kent, which was such a nice area
place
to have.
Yeah, absolutely, with the hop fields and the ale and all the rest of it.
But he hated them. And the idea of commissioning them to write his own propaganda seems a bit dodgy.
Well, you say propaganda, but I think, to me, one of the most remarkable things about the tapestry is that it's not propaganda.
Yeah.
It's so even-handed. It's so fair towards Harold. Harold is the hero of the first half of the tapestry. He helps out William against Conan the Barbarian.
Absolutely. By Mont-Saint-Michel. You can see Mont-Saint-Michel in the background.
Absolutely.
He's pulling those Normans out of the sand pit, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So he was the hero. And then he's given a suit of armour by William and they're basically best buddies.
Yeah.
And then he gets caught in this tragic dilemma because he's handed the crown, almost literally handed the crown by the dying king, Edward the Confessor, which the will of the king, who of course became a saint, was not something that he could ignore. But he'd already given his word to William that he would be his liegeman.
Well, there's this bizarre sequence of events, isn't there, where he ends up being blown off course and ends up being taken by Count Guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then there is this very famous, iconic scene from the Bayeux tapestry where he is swearing an oath on relics.
Yeah.
And what that oath is,
We don't know. We have to assume it's allegiance.
We have to assume it's allegiance and maybe giving the crown over. But there's questions of marriage.
Yeah.
Could he have been being betrothed to William's daughter? Yeah. Or, there's all sorts of alternatives. But in the iconic history of the Bayeux tapestry, it has become that moment of kind of the weak, lily-livered Anglo-Saxon king. And there's that wonderful tentativeveness of the fingertip top, isn't it? It's just touching the reliquary.
I'm not in for this at all.
His fingers are just hovering. But then you've got, I think you're right, I think there's a wonderful even-handedness to it because he has a proper coronation. I suppose the spectre at the feast is Stigand, isn't it? That we have this suggestion of Stigand, the Archbishop.
Yeah.
And so maybe he's not legitimately king.
Absolutely.
Because Stigand's a tricky one, isn't he?
I can't say I know much about Stigand.
Mm. Well, he was excommunicated afterwards.
Right.
So it kind of costs...
Odo had a very rough time afterwards as well, didn't he? He went to Sicily, was it?
Yeah.
And got involved in all sorts of scrapes. And he was imprisoned at one time, wasn't he, by William?
Yep. Oh, they did not have a good relationship.
No, they didn't.
But I think what's interesting as well is we always... You said this in your speech tonight, actually. It really, really made me chuckle. This idea that actually the Normans are Vikings, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
And there's this whole way that people have tried to lay claim to the Bayeux Tapestry. You know, you were saying Hitler tried to lay claim to it. Yep. Napoleon. Yep, give me
absolutely.
A bit of background to that, because that's so fascinating.
Well, Napoleon was about to invade England, and he thought, well, who's done this before? Well, William. William did it. No, so... Let's look at this tapestry, which shows how he invaded England, and he had the tapestry removed from Bayeux. He had it taken to Calais, where it was put on display to show his troops. It survived that journey and many other journeys. Mm. But to me, actually visiting Bayeux for the first time, the really remarkable thing wasn't so much the Hitler and Napoleon's appropriation of the tapestry, but the symbolic gesture that the British and the Americans made in 1944 in choosing Normandy as their landing place for the first invasion to drive out Hitler.
That is profound. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and in fact, Bayeux was the first city to be liberated, and Churchill rubbed their faces in it when he turned up there. He said, "William came from this city to conquer us. We come back to this city to liberate you." That's, you know,
I've been looking at the Bayeux Tapestry.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
But, you know, that's about legacy, isn't it? And I think that there's something so interesting about how different people have interpreted it. I was reading about how Charles Darwin hated the Bayeux Tapestry. He said it looked like it was...
Charles Dickens.
Sorry, it's me going all scientific. Yeah. Charles Dickens hated it.
Yes, I know.
Well, he said very nasty things about it, didn't he?
I'm a great fan of Dickens, but...
He got it wrong on that.
On that one, he
said it looked very barbaric and very crude.
Yeah.
Ruskin loved it, of course. But this idea that actually it was famous in its own time. I read also that it was used because after the French Revolution, wasn't it wrapped up in a wagon or something?
Yes.
It was used to cover a wagon.
Yes, I think it was. That's right.
It was just treated barbarously for a while because, of course, it was there was all this attack on the fine arts that Napoleon was instigating. The revolution was instigating. And I think it was only saved because it was seen as an antiquity, rather than a piece of fine art.
Sure, absolutely.
But doesn't that question our notion of what art is? Because to me, this is art.
I know.
Don't you think?
I know. And how will future generations see what we produce in our day?
Oh, goodness me. I know. How can we define what our art is now?
No, we simply can't.
But in its colours and its textures. And you gave me some statistics earlier. There are hundreds of... Was it 50 dogs or something?
Yeah, 55 dogs, I think it was, and over 500 other, 200 horses, 40 boats.
40 boats, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I forget how many human figures, 200 and something, I think. Yeah.
It's an just extraordinary incredible. Piece. I'm so pleased that the Folio Society have made this reproduction. How would people go about getting it if they wanted to get hold of it?
If they go online and... I hope if they just put Bayeux Tapestry in, it'll come up straight away. Certainly if they put in Folio Society Bayeux Tapestry, it'll come up straight away.
Mm.
And then they can order it from us.
Honestly, listeners, I have seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the box, which is rather dear, let's be honest, to buy the full scroll. But there is also
don't tell me how cheap it is. For what they're getting.
Listen to that. That's pure marketing there. No, it's very, very... For what it is. It is a work of art. I am thinking of not eating for the next month so I can afford to buy that thing, because it is an absolute work of art and everybody involved in it should be, we should be raising glasses, which we will be doing. Thank you for listening, Art Detective listeners. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Let us return to celebrate the Folio Society's new edition.
That's a good idea.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.